I've spent a lot of time, Joe, slating everybody in the company. Backstage, I'm starting fights off everybody. I've ridiculed everyone on the roster. I just want to say from the bottom of my heart, I'd like to take this chance to apologize to absolutely nobody.
When you signed to fight me, it's a celebration. You ring back home, you ring your wife. Baby, we done it. We're rich, baby. Conor McGregor made us rich. Break out the red panties. We're rich, baby.
Mate, you're 40. Get that phone out of your hand like a kid.
Shut your mouth, you'll do nothing. You'll do nothing. Not one of you will do nothing. Get the out of here. Get the out of here.
I speak the truth. I've spoken about Dustin's weirdly shaped head. He has a P-shaped head. His chin has certainly deteriorated. Every single contest he is in, he gets wobbled. You know, he does the chicken dance on a jab.
Say it like it is. You're blessed. You're blessed that I chose you. You're blessed that I chose to whoop your ass next.
It's the Mac Attack with Ryan Big Mac McKinnell on 920 The Game.
Who the is that guy?
That wouldn't be the first time someone's asked that question. My, oh my. Conor McGregor in better, worse days? I don't know how you want to look at that. What's up, Las Vegas? Welcome in here on this Thursday edition of the Mac Attack. Pete DeBoer introduced as Golden Knights head coach. Conor McGregor and Donald Cerrone had a press conference last night. And it was absolutely nothing like what you just heard from those clips. It was disgustingly tepid. I was disappointed, Magnum. I was disappointed.
Well, you know, there's a combination of things, right? Like maybe there's respect. Maybe he actually likes Cerrone.
Maybe.
I don't know. Maybe not.
Maybe it's the two active sexual assault allegations that are happening over in Ireland.
You better be on your best behavior, Connor. You know what's funny though? In all those clips that I found, what might be the best part about all of them, and you can't obviously see it in when you're listening to it, you can't see the clips, but Dana White laughing.
Oh, yeah.
Every time he says something, and the funniest, I thought the funniest one was the McGregor one or Mayweather, where he's yelling to him to get off the phone.
You're 40, mate.
He's up there talking on the podium about how, you know, 4 years ago he was fighting in front of 500 people in London.
Right.
And now he's got this big payday, and the whole time Mayweather's just sunglasses. I think it's Al Heyman. He's laughing the whole time. You know, they were
laughing at the truckloads of money they were going to be making off of this crazy Irishman.
Off of this buffoon who thought he actually had a chance.
Did he? I don't know. You know what? He sounded like he did. I'm gonna believe that he believed.
You know what?
Because, I mean, I got nothing else to go on.
Listen, I mean, you and me both grew up watching wrestling. You knew when someone like Earthquake or Hakim... Or no, it was Akeem, right? Akeem the Dream?
Yes.
Akeem the African Dream.
Yeah. The formerly one-man gang who was a gigantic white biker who then found himself in Africa.
Thanks to the Doctor of Style, Slick.
Slick, and came back as a token white dashiki-wearing jive-talking. I'm not kidding. This dude came out with like a jive walk, and he was like, yeah, daddy, that's right. And
he had the hat.
Oof.
But, like,
yeah.
Those guys always talked a great game before they got in the ring against Hogan.
And then got their ass kicked.
And then, you know, they looked like they were kicking butt for a little bit, and then Hogan would get the shakes, and he'd start blowing at you. And
the shakes.
You knew it was all over at that point.
Blowing at you, blowing his nails.
Yeah. Shaking the head, sweat dripping off of you knew at that point, no matter how good the Doctor of Style pumped up his guy, the Big Boss Man was about to get his ass kicked.
Yes, that is true. Who's gonna get their ass kicked on Saturday? I don't know. We'll talk about it coming up in about 20 minutes. We'll get more into UFC 246, get my thoughts. I'm a little salty. I was on satellite last night for 4 hours, and I could tell. I was like, guys, I was talking to my producers back in New York. I was like, I'm telling you, this press conference is going to be about 30 minutes, and it is not going to be venomous because it's just not the way McGregor is approaching this fight week. And I was right, and we'll get into it. A really disappointing moment, though, from some MMA fans that I want to touch on. But
do you kind of feel like maybe that could hurt Conor in this fight? The fact that he's kind of not his usual self.
Well, here's the thing, and we can talk more about this in a little bit. I think this is his usual self. I think Conor McGregor has a duality there, right? Like he can be one or the other. He can be extremely charming, well thought out, contrite, polite, endearing and charming, and all the other words you want to use to define a polite human being that you kind of you totally take home to mom, right? McGregor can be that. And then he can be a rage-fueled, fast-talking, psychopathic, almost like a coked-up maniac, right? Like he's just spitting venom at every corner, and you don't know where it's going to come, and it's highly unpredictable in a lot of ways. This is the former. This is the McGregor that we saw earlier in his career, and as I said, for good reason. He's got a lot of attention on him and a lot of eyes on him right now, and not all of it is good. But we'll save that here for a little bit. One thing I want to get into, I got lambasted by a buddy of mine last night, and I didn't even think about it. He's a loyal listener. He used to work for the UFC, but he's a huge baseball fan. And he hit me up, and he's catching up on the podcast over there on LV Sports Network. And he texted me last night. He's like, "Did you talk about Alex Cora and the Astros?" And I was like, "Yeah." I say, like, I think I did on Monday. First, we only have an hour. I say, like, yeah. I think we did on Monday, but we're coming off the NFL playoffs, and we were leading into the national title game.
And then Gerard Glenn gets fired on Wednesday,
right? And then Tuesday, we're recapping the national title game and getting more into UFC. Point being was, being a huge baseball fan, he completely understands where the game is at, right? But he just goes, that speaks volumes to where football is and the importance of football. And I thought about it. He made a really good point. It's like, this is an all-time historic scandal on par with the Black Sox of 1919. This is a huge cheating scandal that touches multiple teams in multiple years, in large part due to Alex Cora.
Yeah.
Right? And it's another notch in the belt of insanity for baseball. Another lowering of the bar, another negative headline. And it just kind of, for him, he followed up. It shows you where baseball is and the fact that this was a blip on the radar, not only on your show. He wasn't really going after the Mac attack. He was just the general consensus. He brought up ESPN. He brought up the headline bar on ESPN. He's like, that story was on there for 4 hours. He had timestamps. Like I said, he's very obsessed with the health of baseball, and I appreciate that, right? Because baseball fans need to be, honestly. Because if baseball fans don't have themselves, and they don't count, they don't care, I should say, about the game, who's going to? So I felt kind of bad from the standpoint that, I mean, obviously this is a huge deal, massive deal. And even though, and listen, I know it's only an hour, but that's 3 hours of radio we've had this week.
Well,
and to not really touch on it is, I couldn't believe it, honestly. When I went back and thought about it, I was like, you know what? We haven't. So,
well, you know, it's funny because when you look at Las Vegas specifically, now obviously it's a much bigger deal in Houston and Boston than it is in Las Vegas. But when you look at where that ranks in just Las Vegas, right, just this week, the NFL playoffs, clearly number one. National title game. Then you have Gerard Gallant getting fired yesterday. I mean, UFC this week.
Yeah.
So it's what, fifth, maybe yeah. sixth on the list?
I mean, Bad Boys 3 comes out tonight. I mean, it's probably seventh.
I mean, which is kind of crazy because, you know, when we were kids.
You laugh, but I'm dead serious.
When we were kids, baseball was.
It was everything.
It was. I mean, I used to go to the store. I'd go to my Wawa every Friday, and I'd go buy baseball cards. Always. With a Coke yeah. and a Milky Way, I'd buy baseball cards. It was just a thing, right? You'd put them in the spokes of your bike, right? Like you get a crappy player.
I feel like Billy Joel should be playing right now. You got any Billy Joel?
No, I don't. But yeah, this is the time to remember, right? Isn't that one of his sadder songs?
Sure. But
reliving the memories of our youth, but it's fallen so far, and when we were kids, we never really thought about the cheating aspect in sports. Like, we never really thought that guys would take steroids to be better at baseball.
No, it was like George Brett and Pine Tar and Albert Bell with a corked bat.
Yeah, like, those were the big...
While Ken Caminiti was walking around with an 85-inch neck. I mean, no, seriously, like, we should have known.
Yeah.
But it was a much more innocent time. Well, and the gaze wasn't on steroids
The reality is, and people will... always pinpoint the moment that there was the strike.
Yeah.
The Montreal Expos would have gone on to win the World Series. Who knows? Maybe they stay in Montreal. There's no Washington Nationals. But I feel like the trajectory of baseball from that moment has been a downward spiral. And I love baseball. I love going to games. I love.
We both do.
You know, it's like, to me, yeah, it's a great game to go to. I can go have a few beers, sit in, if I want to sit in the outfield, if I want to walk around.
Right.
Get some garlic fries at AT&T Park, but...
Mm. Now you're making me hungry.
Yes.
Stop that. So, Alex Cora, a great move by the Red Sox yesterday.
They had to get out ahead of it.
They did, but you... there was always... I wasn't necessarily expecting it.
I was. You know,
move was firing Alex Cora, no question.
Now, had the Red Sox won 105 games last year and make the playoffs or make a run in the playoffs... I think the decision's a little bit more difficult for them to make, but the fact that the Red Sox stunk last year, at least by their standards, maybe that made the decision a little bit easier for them. And then here's the other aspect that nobody's really talking about. Mike Fears, right? The guy who brought this to light, he had a problem with it. Yet when he was on the team winning the World Series, he did not have a problem with it. He knew about it. So why are we giving him a pass for being a rat? I mean, if this was a mob movie, Mike Fears ends up at the bottom of the Hudson River. Mike Fears is floating in the East River. That's the way it works in the mob movies. But I think people are kind of like, oh, yeah, Mike Fears. Yeah, way to go. You exposed this. But he was on the team when it was happening.
Yeah.
He didn't speak. If he was really going to be a hero, he could have spoken up and said something while it was going on.
So Alex Cora gets fired from the Red Sox. The Astros, they lose some draft picks. Their coach and GM were suspended a year, and then obviously they were let go by ownership.
Are you satisfied with the punishment?
Absolutely not. No, but
it should have been harsher.
It absolutely should have been harsher. And here's why I want to get into that. The Astros 2017 postseason, stick with me here because I got some stats that I want to read off. It's just home and away stats. But the contrast, and at home, is when the trash can banging and the video surveillance and center, all of that was going on at home, the majority of it, right? Check out these numbers. At home, they were 8-1. On the road, they were 3-6. At home, they had 51 runs scored. On the road, 27. At home, 18 home runs. On the road, 9. Half.
I notice a trend.
37 base hits at home, 37 extra base hits at home, 24 extra base hits on the road, a 273 batting average at home, and a 208 batting average on the road.
That's the big one for me.
Yep.
Because that's a lot of points.
And the double of home runs. And you know what?
Like the home runs, like, okay, maybe you know, the dimensions of the ballparks they played in are different, but to me, batting average should be the same or pretty close to the same no matter which park you're playing.
Not a 70 almost point difference.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking almost one extra hit.
And nine games at home and 9 games on the road. 8-1 at home, 3-6 on the road. Again, that could just be home cooking. But when you get into double the home runs, almost double the runs scored.
Yeah.
13 more extra base hits and an almost 70-point batting average increase at home. This is damning. And I go back to Game 6. You remember Game 6 in Houston against the Dodgers? Do you remember any of that? It was wild.
Was that
the one that went
to extra innings?
Yes, and it had Altuve's home run. I remember before Altuve's big home run, and I should go back and rewatch this game for the case of this discussion, but I'm literally going off memory. I remember watching Altuve, and for those of you that are Astros fans, you'll probably remember this. No, actually, for those of you that are Dodgers fans, you're definitely going to remember this. But when Altuve had a really important at-bat, and I think it was like a 3-run home run. I don't remember. This is terrible. I'm doing terrible sports radio here. But I remember he was fouling off balls. And I'm talking moonshot-ripping foul shots where I was like, dude, this guy is going to hit a home run.
Sometimes you get that feeling.
You do, but you shouldn't be able, in that moment in a game six of the World Series, I shouldn't know. And I remember looking at my wife go, he's going to hit a home run.
Yeah, like you just, when you see that, you know.
Right, but I thought he was locked in. Yeah. I thought he was just seeing the ball, and I thought Altuve was Altuve. And maybe he is. That's the other point of this. Is now I don't know what to believe again.
You don't know if he legitimately is an MVP
again,
now.
Again. I go back to being 10 years old. And I go back to 1993. And Jose, not even that. Let's fast forward a few more years. Let's go to 97. Let's go to 98. Let's go to the home run chase.
McGuire, Sosa.
And let's go to when we started hearing
Bonds,
about the...
whose head size grew five sizes.
And then we started hearing about steroids. And then everything came to fruition, and we found out what we found out, and Balco and all that, the cream and the clear, and then Alex Rodriguez a few years later, and it just a compiling snowball effect. Rafael Palmeiro, I did not cheat.
Yeah, you did. We have proof.
Right, Roger Clemens putting in ridiculous numbers in the mid-2000s.
I still laugh about, and again, as a Mets fan, I have so much pain and so much anger in my heart. But the whole incident with Mike Piazza, where Piazza breaks the bat and Clemens picks up the broken part of the bat and throws it at Piazza.
Yeah.
And then his explanation is, I thought it was the ball. No, you didn't.
That was bad.
A jackass. That was the steroids that you were taking, you jackass.
Yeah.
I thought it was the ball. What are we playing, dodgeball all of a sudden? Kickball? You could throw the ball at the runner?
He was very angry. Not like this Mets fan, Magnum, would remember anything like that or Harvey O'Neill.
That piece of garbage. I hope he never gets in, that piece of garbage.
But I'll tell you what. That venom that you feel, and you talk about Clemens being a piece of garbage. I mean, that was an entire generation. And now here
Let me ask you this. Because you are a White Sox fan.
Yeah.
The White Sox beat Roger Clemens and Andy Pettit in the world.
I was at the Clemens game. That was game one.
If roles were reversed and the Astros had gone on to win that World Series, knowing what you do today, as an Astros fan, you're feeling, or as a White Sox fan, you're feeling an awful lot like the Dodger fans are today.
Yeah.
That your team got absolutely screwed.
And not just in 1 year.
Multiple.
Back to back. And who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows? Who knows more? And yes, this has a ripple effect of the criticisms around Dave Roberts, the criticisms around Clayton Kershaw, their decision. You know, we don't know anymore.
Maybe lost his job because of this.
Exactly. We don't know how good that Astros team was. We don't know what we were watching. I don't know how good one of the most exciting young players in baseball was and is with Jose Altuve. I don't know any of it. And it pisses me off. So I guess that's me talking about this scandal. I don't know what more you can say. It's just another, it's a voodoo doll, right? Another pin in the cushion. It's another knee wobbling moment in baseball history for me where I'm like, damn it, can you guys just get right? I spent the summer bitching about the juiced balls.
Yeah.
I thought that was going to be the worst problem with baseball this year. Boy, was I wrong.
Well, and I think we'll really see the effects of it this summer. If the Astros are a mediocre team, I mean, there's no reason why they should be, but if they are, all of a sudden you're like, all right.
Yeah, it ain't losing Gerrit Cole.
It's more than that.
Yeah.
Because they didn't have Gerrit Cole when they won the World Series.
Right, exactly.
So it's more than that.
Mm.
But it's just going to be – I'm gonna be real curious to see how this season plays out, because if the Astros stink, then there's something rotten in the kingdom of Denmark. And that might be the only time I ever quote Shakespeare on live radio in the history of my career.
Nerd! All right. So we'll turn the page on baseball, obviously. We will see what the ramifications are as the season goes on. As Magnum said, let's keep an eye on the Astros. Speaking of keeping an eye on things, obviously we got the playoffs here just in about 48 hours. Well, on Sunday. 72 hours, whatever the hell the number is.
Close enough. Math was never your strong point.
No, it wasn't. That's why I talk into a microphone every day, feeding people terrible information and saying 48 hours instead of 72. But obviously the playoffs getting going on Sunday. And, we're obviously very excited. Two great matchups. I know it's not the NFL is probably not super excited that the Tennessee Titans have a chance to take out the Chiefs, which I think, you know, if you've been listening to the show for the last, 5 months, or not 5 months, but certainly the last 5 weeks, I've been very high on the Tennessee Titans, and I like them in this game against the Chiefs. But before we get into the playoffs and our thoughts on that, and we'll have more on the NFL playoffs, obviously, tomorrow on the Friday show, I think we need to watch this Aaron Hernandez documentary.
Yeah, it came out yesterday, yeah. And yeah. I saw nothing but things on social media about how great it is, yeah, and how it's a must watch. And I mean, it seems like Netflix hit it out of the park.
Yeah. I heard words like, you know, shocking and twists and turns and curveballs. Curveball was a word that I heard. And I'm even more intrigued. I mean, I was already going to watch it.
Well, like,
what don't we know?
Well, what I didn't know, and I only got it from the trailer, the relationship he had with his father.
Yeah.
And how tough his dad was. And I'm going to be curious to see how in-depth they go with that, the relationship he had with his dad. Like, was his dad physically abusive? Was he mentally abusive?
Yeah.
You know, could that have played a role in how – well, obviously, if it was – then obviously that's going to play a role in how Hernandez turned out as a human, right? Because you always hear that people who were abused as children tend to, well, a lot of times have issues as adults.
Sure, yeah.
Whether it's sexually abused or whether it's physically abused or whatever. So I'm going to be curious to see how in-depth they go with the relationship with his dad. I don't know a whole lot about his dad. I don't know a whole lot about his mom. I know he grew up in a pretty nice part of Connecticut.
Right.
Which is what makes it even more shocking, right? Because Connecticut, for those of you who are unfamiliar with Connecticut, Hartford is the biggest city, but it's kind of a city that people in southern Connecticut don't really associate with the rest of the state, because southern Connecticut is about as wealthy as you can possibly imagine. It's like Beverly Hills, but it's basically half of a state.
Yeah.
So the area he grew up in is not exactly a rough area. So I'm going to be curious to see about his childhood, because you know that had to play a role in who Hernandez turned out as an adult.
Yeah, and by all accounts, when you mentioned the preview, and I have seen that. And, you know, we lived with Aaron Hernandez. We followed that story from almost the very beginning, right? Seemed to have an obsession with coming across as
being a gangster.
Being hard.
Yeah.
Dangerous. Took pride in killing.
And I wonder if that comes from where he came from,
yeah,
right?
I think there's a chance. Yeah.
You're from an affluent area. You're from a nice area. You can't be hard. You can't be a gangster. You don't know what the life is all about. And it was about proving himself to I don't know who, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I think if you make it to the NFL, you prove to everybody that you're hard.
And you can, if you're trying to prove that you're hard, you know, Connecticut is not a limiter in that regard. I mean, you are surrounded in that region by Boston, New York, Baltimore, Philly. I mean, you are close. If you want to meet dangerous people, and I'm sure there's dangerous people in Connecticut, as we
absolutely.
With the Hernandez story. But I'm just saying, there was a lot of opportunity to go bad.
You almost wonder, too, if he gets drafted, say, by a different team,
mm-hmm,
right? Because Boston and Connecticut are very, very close. If he got drafted by, say, St. Louis or Seattle, maybe things turn out a little bit different, because maybe he's not so close to home and the people he grew up around that he has to prove this to. I mean, obviously St. Louis is a dangerous city, right? It's always near the top of the list of
every American city, I think, has its different danger levels. But yeah, I get what you're saying. There's certainly a possibility. I think that's what's going to make this story so interesting.
I'm going to watch it this weekend.
I do have tickets to Bad Boys tonight. I'm not kidding.
Oh, man.
So when I'm talking about my Bad Boys.
I don't
Boys,
think there's going to be a whole lot of competition for seats for that one.
What?
It's not going to be Star Wars where it's sold out.
Dare you, Chris? This is unacceptable. I bought my ticket a week ago, and there were only two other people that had pre-purchased, so you might have heard.
Yeah, I don't think that's when people are rushing to the theaters at midnight on the release date.
It's gotten very good reviews.
That's good,
we
though.
Talked about this with Greg Wyshynski yesterday, Puck Daddy. He was on the show. He's very surprised at the Rotten Tomatoes. I checked last night. It was hovering around the high 70s. So,
which is good. I think when a movie is...
For a corny-ass action movie?
Yes.
Yeah,
with Martin Lawrence, who hasn't been in anything in like 10 years, and Will Smith, obviously Will Smith is Will Smith.
But what's he done good?
He's done a lot.
Recently?
I haven't seen it, but I heard Aladdin was off the charts.
Oh, okay.
I heard he was really good in Aladdin.
All right.
Almost Robin Williams-esque,
oof,
but he was his own character.
All right.
Like, he did not try to emulate Robin Williams. And I know it's now on Disney Plus, so I have the opportunity to watch that. But, you know, I Will Smith is he has a track record of making movies good. And now I wish his kid didn't remake Karate Kid.
That wasn't his fault. Get the bag.
Jim. No. Well, but I don't know. I liked the first one. I didn't see the second one.
What do you mean you didn't see the second one?
I didn't see the second one.
It's like 15 years old now.
I know. It wasn't on my priority list. We'll put it that way.
You don't deserve to see Bad Boys for Life. You aren't a bad boy for life.
Did they bring out Puffy's old song?
No. Oh, the...
This is Bad Boy for Life.
Oh. Dun, 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 dun. Yeah.
What a clown.
Let's go. Are we going to freestyle now? All right. So quick look ahead before we head off to break. Let's get your thoughts on these playoff games, Magnum. Obviously, Green Bay taking on San Francisco and the Titans taking on the Chiefs. There is a team every year that just defies logic. They can sneak in. They can make life rough for the team that they are playing, a favorite. They don't always win the Super Bowl. Sometimes they do, though. Ravens in 12-13, whenever that was.
Joe Flacco years, yeah.
Yeah. Eli Manning. Twice, really, when he did it both. I'm talking about chemistry. I'm talking about intangibles. I'm talking also about heat. And right now, I don't know if there is a hotter, more confident, more cohesive team than Derrick Henry, Ryan Tannehill, and this Tennessee Titans team. They feel like they're almost unbeatable. They have a crazy amount of confidence. You saw the way they came out in that last game.
Yeah.
They kicked them in the teeth. Lamar Jackson didn't stand a chance.
Well, the difference is I think Pat Mahomes is a better quarterback than Lamar Jackson, right? He's got a little more experience. He's a little more of a complete quarterback.
I'd agree with that. We should say they are the two best
quarterbacks in the NFL
game,
right,
probably. Yeah.
But I think Mahomes right now is the best quarterback in the game.
Yeah.
And he just displays this poise. He never panics. He makes good decisions. His awareness, I just feel like that's a difference maker. What worries me, and I think Kansas City is going to win the game, but what worries me...
Do you think they cover? It's at 7.5 some places.
I think a lot of it's going to depend on the first couple drives of the game. But what worries... Because if Tennessee gets behind, they're not coming back. What worries me...
That is true. They don't really have that comeback capability, at least on paper.
I don't trust Ryan Tannehill to lead me from 14 points down.
It's not that I don't trust him.
Arrowhead.
It's not so much that I don't trust him. It's what weapons is he working with.
To do
right,
that.
Exactly. He doesn't have that sort of head. Exactly.
But what worries me, and I think what worries everybody who is a Chiefs backer, a Chiefs fan, will Andy Reid play a factor in blowing this game for Kansas City?
Because game management.
Because that is the one thing that scares me from betting Kansas City. I mean, you remember a couple of years, was it 2 years ago? They had that huge lead against Tennessee. And it was a different Tennessee team. Marcus Mariota leads a comeback. Huge deficit in the second half. They come back and win the game. Andy Reid has a track record. Even last year, they came out against New England.
That's a great point.
And they were the better team in the second half. The problem was they dug himself a hole to where it was hard to come back and win that game, especially in Foxborough. Andy Reid has a track record of crapping himself in huge moments. I would say there's a better chance, though, of Green Bay going to San Francisco and winning that game than there is of Tennessee going to Kansas City and winning the game.
I think we could see an upset in both situations. I could see Green Bay taking out San Francisco because of Aaron Rodgers, and I could see Tennessee taking out Kansas City because of Derrick Henry. There are intangibles with both of them, and specifically, we talked about it a little bit earlier in the week in regards to Derrick Henry. There's just really not a whole lot of people like Derrick Henry.
No, he is, you know, definitely. I mean? He almost has that. I'm trying to think of a comparison. Like the year that. I mean, I'm just trying to find it because there's really not a guy I could say.
Jamal Lewis.
Yeah.
With the Ravens back in the early 2000s.
Lewis was a 2000 yard guy.
I mean, Derrick Henry's not that far off.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's a good comparison, right? And that team ended up winning the Super Bowl.
That's why I used the comparison. It's hard, though, with Derrick Henry because 6'3", 250, There's just not a lot
of running backs that possess that size and speed.
That's the combination, right? And it's the wear down factor. Now, I will say this. Kansas City looks extremely healthy. They look rested. They look like they're playing some of their best football. But I'm a money line guy. I like to mess around. I like that plus money.
Well, I got burnt last night. Thanks a lot, Butler.
Sorry, buddy. Sorry.
But, damn Indiana team.
Yeah. Those Hoosiers, not the Indiana Hoosiers.
Losing Hoosiers to Seton Hall. I should have known, right? Why would I pick an Indiana team over a New Jersey team?
You should have called one of those phone numbers.
I know.
Got the extra
edge. Yes, we got the information.
Come on. Don't you know? You know better than that, Magnum. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to dive into this press conference that happened yesterday in Las Vegas between Conor McGregor and Donald Cowboy Cerrone. There's a lot to get to, or maybe there wasn't. It was way too friendly until a media member asked Conor McGregor about his sexual assaults, and he was mercilessly, I should say, booed by the crowd and, on some levels, Dana White, and even, inexplicably, Donald Cowboy Cerrone coming to the defense of his opponent, Conor McGregor. What bizarre world are we living in? We'll be right back here in 2020 on the Mac Attack.
It's the Mac Attack with Ryan Big Mac McKinnell on 920 The Game.
All right, we are back here on the Mac Attack. We'll get to this 246, UFC 246 press conference here in just 1 second. But Golden Knights' new head coach, Peter DeBoer, was introduced today. We'll get more into it a little bit tomorrow and get some audio for you and let you hear it. Plus, he's got a game tonight. So let's see how Coach does in his introductory, I guess,
I thought he handled the introductory press conference pretty well.
Yeah, I thought so. He had some levity. He had some humor. He joked about, he was asked at one point about, I forget the media member that asked him, but essentially said, hey, I talked to some players and, they wonder how the relationship's going to be. He said, one of the media members asked about Ryan Reeves. I talked to Ryan Reeves, the member said, and, he essentially said, we don't have the best relationship, Reeves referencing with DeBoer. You know, we got a history. I feel like I might need to go over and give him a hug. And DeBoer laughed at that. He was very light. He was he was very friendly. And he essentially said, this is a great group of guys.
They play the style he likes. They play heavy. They're fast. Yep. He likes that.
Yep. He also said that, and this is something I really liked because I think there's a lot of truth in that. And I think one of the main reasons that, as you said, if it was anyone else other than DeBoer, we would have a much bigger problem with it. I don't think either one of us liked the firing. It felt rushed. It felt a little inconsistent.
The more I think about it, the less I like the way that the Golden Knights handled it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot to it, right? Like, if the decision was not made in haste, then why bring Gerard Gallant to Buffalo, to Ottawa? Why not just fire him before you leave for the road trip? I feel like it was calculated, like it was done to avoid. You do it in Ottawa, where there literally is no media from Las Vegas there. There was one reporter from Vegas there when it happened. So you avoid all of that.
You got the news from Ron Futrell yesterday out at City
National. Yep.
That they were kicking media out and said they didn't want to talk to fans. They didn't want them talking to fans, which was as snowflake. It's as snowflaky as ridiculous as you can get.
You made this decision.
Right.
Fans are clearly not happy about the decision. Pull your pants up. You are a major league franchise. Deal with the fallout. If you are willing to make this decision, then you have to be willing to deal with the way that the fans react. And to kick the media out, that's inexcusable.
Yeah, and it's going to have – people have a long memory.
Yeah.
And
if DeBoer does not win,
yeah,
like I said yesterday, this has the potential to blow up in their face.
Yeah, it does. It does. It does. Speaking of blowing up in people's faces, none of that happened last night here at the park. Or no, it was at the Palms. Yeah, shout out to the park, though. We love going down there.
Italy.
Yeah.
Good place.
Yeah. But I talk about the presser, I believe, was at the Palms last night, but the press conference between Conor McGregor and Donald Cerrone. A lot of people were expecting fireworks. They were expecting venom. They were expecting a lot of back and forth. We got none of that. What we did get was Conor McGregor complimenting Donald Cerrone on his snakeskin jacket. What? like you heard the lead in, right? You had that great intro, Magnum, with Conor McGregor spitting fire at almost every opponent he has ever had. And this just turned into Donald Cerrone thanking Conor McGregor for the opportunity. I'm just happy that I get to be in the ring with this guy. He's a great guy. It's going to be a war and yada, yada, yada.
A lot of what McGregor was saying, right? Like, you should be honored that I picked you to kick your ass.
And so now Donald Cerrone is essentially towing McGregor company line. Like, what? What? And here was the oddest moment in the whole press conference, and we'll get more into the fight here in a second, but at some point, a media member from Canada took the microphone and asked Conor McGregor about what the elephant in the room was, and the elephant in the room is Conor McGregor's sexual assault allegations in Ireland. Now, in Ireland, there are huge protections for both victim and accuser and defendant.
It's
right?
It's a little bit different than here.
Yeah, well, very different. So much so that the parties cannot be named. Legally, in the press, they cannot be named. They cannot be mentioned. They can't be referenced. There is none of that. And it's to protect both the accuser, right, and the person who's defending themselves.
In a way, I kind of like that.
Yeah, it's actually a really great way of going about things because if the person who's being accused is acquitted and let off the hook, you never know, and it doesn't stain their reputation, like a Patrick Kane.
Yeah,
right? Remember then that rape accusation happened with Patrick Kane. I don't know six years, I think it was. Right, and that stuck with him, and I think still sticks with him. I mean, he goes to away games, and you'll hear things occasionally about that, and. You know, he's essentially exonerated from that. We should have never known about that. So I understand, right? So McGregor was asked about the sexual assault very, very professionally. Just essentially, you know, you have this going on. How has this impacted? Well, the point was, he tried to get through his question, but he couldn't. Because as soon as he began asking his question, the crowd inside the Palms, and shame on you, if you're out there listening, you're a piece of trash. They started booing him. And not only did they start booing him, the booing got louder, and then expletives started coming down. Blank this, blank you piece of garbage. Like, it was concerning to say the least, making matters worse. UFC President Dana White started to try to cut off the question. He already answered that. He answered that with Helwani on ESPN, essentially what he's saying. Trying to not let the question, at least from my vantage point, trying to not let the question be asked. Also, at the same time, feeding those idiots in the crowd that are booing this member of the press for asking McGregor a completely...
It's a legitimate question.
It's an absolutely legitimate question. Damn the Irish law. New York Times named McGregor in two different articles.
Yeah.
So that's an American paper with real legitimacy. And that question needs to be asked because the fans want to know. It might not be those fans at the Palms, right?
Yeah.
You may not be serving those fans, clearly not. But there are a large portion of fans that want answers. How could the UFC roll him out with these out? They must feel very confident that he's going to be acquitted, or else that is an extremely bad look for the UFC. But as we talk about Aaron Hernandez, the Patriots, you know, they knew what they knew on some level, and
they were
willing to roll that dice. And I think, you know, I don't know what the UFC knows, and it doesn't really matter. They're rolling the dice no matter what with this.
And UFC press conferences have always kind of, I guess surprised me the way that they're handled, because you basically bring the fans into the press conference, which, well, as you and I know, in every other sport, is not the way it works. I mean, now, granted, after fights, the fans aren't in there with the media, but like something like this before the fight, it just blows me away that because you open yourself up to situations like this where jackasses take over and...
Well, sometimes they let them ask questions, and that's even more ridiculous show, if you will, right? But then I was, like I said, I was on satellite last night, and we were live reacting to it, and I saw so many comments of people... You know he's not going to answer. Why even ask the question?
Because
you
have a responsibility.
Right, exactly. But they don't understand that, Magnum. They don't understand that. They come back with, oh, that media member was just looking for attention. He was just trying to, you know, get praise from the other media members so they could pat each other on the back, and it's this big fake news conspiracy. These hacks just care about attention. It's like, do you really – I mean, first of all, I had Adam Hill on, our pal Adam Hill, Adam on Satellite last night, and he essentially said that he was next to someone. He didn't name a name, but he was at someone next to someone last night at the press conference. So I had a couple follow-up questions that wanted to ask similar questions along the lines of the sexual assault and the allegations, and that person was like, they shelved it. They were like, what's the point? What's the point? I'm just going to get berated by the crowd, and who knows what that, you know, could lead to, right? The UFC president, Dana White, is going to do what he just did to this other guy. Right. And more inexplicably, when that media member asked Connor about that, Connor didn't really get a chance to respond. I'm sure he would have responded with a very run of the mill formulaic response, which he had queued up. And that was his right. That do your thing, man. I understand if you don't want to comment on it, but the media has to ask their job. Right. Inexplicably, Donald Cowboy Cerrone came to the defense of Connor McGregor, essentially saying, hey, man, why are you bothering this guy? He already answered those questions. We got a fight to think about, you know, yada, yada, yada. It's like, dude, I'm not saying you need to, like, lay it on thicker or make it worse for him or play into it or reference the allegations. You don't need to do any of that. But to come to his defense, to be essentially a cheerleader for McGregor and to stand up for Conor McGregor in that situation, why would you not just shut up and just let the moment take place? There was a whole lot of love being shown last night between the complimenting of the jackets, between the, you know, sticking up for your opponent. At one point, just a few years ago, these two were at each other's throats at a press conference. It's one of the reasons this fight is happening, on top of the fact that Conor McGregor handpicked this opponent and wanted Donald Cowboy Cerrone as his match because he feels like he can beat him. This is all being orchestrated by McGregor. And you know what last night's press conference felt like? And it should never feel like this. It felt like a PR, like a statement. It felt like I was reading a 30-page PR statement. Nothing authentic was done.
Yeah, it's contrived by lawyers and to make everyone look good, when in reality there is a giant, as you mentioned, elephant in the room.
Now, I guess the good news is on Saturday night, no matter what, I do expect Donald Cowboy Cerrone and Conor McGregor to have a really good fight. Because I don't think that Donald Cerrone is capable of having a bad fight, and I also think he has so much machismo and ego that I don't think his brain will let him do anything else than have a stand-up war with Conor McGregor. Because I think Donald Cerrone's jiu-jitsu, his ground game, his ability, especially from the top, even from the bottom, he's got really good offensive and defensive jiu-jitsu. He has a real advantage in that department, I think, especially when you factor in the fact this fight is happening at 170 pounds and not 145 or 155 where McGregor, you know, was champion. He's fighting 25, 35 pounds up in weight. It's pretty ridiculous, right? It's pretty ridiculous. The fact that this fight, obviously the news surrounding everything and the uncharacteristic sort of fight week feel, but the fact that there should be so much venom with this fight and there should be so much interest from a, you know, like I said, a hype standpoint, there isn't. And there should be a ton of interest from a stylistic standpoint, but I don't know. In terms of hardcore fans, if you're out there listening and you know what this fight is, I think there should be a bit of drama in the sense that Donald Cerrone, is Cowboy going to be willing to take this fight to the ground? I don't think he's going to, and he talked about it last night. He praised McGregor's ground game, essentially likening him to the boogeyman, that his ground game is so much better than people understand, and it's not just that easy to get him to the ground, and yada, yada, yada. Yeah, I would agree with that. Connor, his ground game and his wrestling takedown defense is probably pretty solid. But I just have this feeling that Donald Cerrone is going to go out there and want to try to prove a point and mix it up with Conor McGregor on the feet, and that's a huge mistake because Conor McGregor's power in his left hand is unrivaled. It really is. It really is. I'll say this, though. If you're looking to bet McGregor, wait. Wait. I do think the number's going to come down a little bit. I just think it's a natural – it's kind of a natural way the betting window works, right? You get some tourists in. You get some people in that are going to fight. They want to bet. Then they go up to the window and they say, hey, I want to put 100 on Conor McGregor. And then they find out that 100 nets them 30 bucks, right? And then they say, well, what if I bet, you know, Cerrone? And then they're like, oh, well, then you get 320 back on the return or whatever it is. I haven't looked at the line in the last 24 hours, right?
Yeah, that's always one of the most disappointing things about fights, yes, right? Like, yes. Like, you walk up to the window, and I can remember doing it for, I can't remember what fight it was, and I was like, really? I'm only going to get, like, a few dollars back? Like,
so you flip it.
Yeah, I'm like, what? I lost.
Yes, you did. But that's why I said if you're going to bet McGregor, wait, because you're going to get a lot of that flip-flop of money. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, a little bit more here on the Mac Attack.
You're listening to the Mac Attack.
All right, we are back here on the Mac Attack home stretch. I didn't talk about this on Monday. I can't believe I forgot it. Anthony Davis, you know, Chicago-born Anthony Davis, L.A. Laker Anthony Davis, went to that Packers game over the weekend. Completely doled out, decked out, I should say, in Packers gear.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's not acceptable.
It's not acceptable. It's not. But, you know, I had this conversation with Cofield on his show last week. There is no loyalty in sports.
No.
There really isn't.
Especially
no,
if you're a pro athlete.
Especially if you're a pro athlete or if you're Drake, right? But I referenced I referenced a, you know, the 2005, we talked about it. Roger Clemens and steroids. I was at the 2005 World Series, Game 1. Roger Clemens was on the mound, Chicago White Sox, Houston Astros, right? There were people in that stadium. This is like the first World Series game in Chicago in like 60-some-odd, 69 years, something like that. There were people in that crowd with Cubs hats on.
Oh.
No, it's because this whole conversation started about the Knicks and the Nets. Remember KD last week was going back and forth with that.
Yeah,
that Knicks.
Brandon Tierney.
Tierney, right. And they were going back and forth, and Tierney essentially said, you dipped out on the Mecca, and you went to Brooklyn, and yada, 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 and the whole Mecca started thing, and the New York Knicks thing started. My point being was Cofield was so adamant that Knicks fans would never cheer for the Nets. And I was like, that's ridiculous. It's New York basketball at the end of the day. Now, I'm not saying the majority, no. But if you're thinking that someone isn't going to cheer on the Brooklyn Nets when you're a Knicks fan and you've won nothing, you have an entire generation of fans that don't even remember who John Starks and Patrick Ewing are.
Yeah.
So you're talking about a 25-year-old who is a New York to the core, and the Knicks are a joke. And now you've got Kevin Durant?
Yeah.
Like, I'm just saying. They talk about no loyalty in sports. The same thing happened a little bit with the Clippers when Blake Griffin came around. There was a generational shift. You're not taking the entire fan base, right? But it happened in Chicago.
It'll happen, yeah.
Right, and my point is
because they're front runners,
right?
And they want to feel like they support
and
a
New
winner.
York, and New York isn't some special, stronghold.
Well, they're so desperate for a winner,
and that's my point. And that's exactly what those Cubs fans were in 2005. They just wanted to see Chicago in baseball win something. I promise you.
I don't think White Sox fans were rooting for Cubs a couple years ago.
Well, you know what? It's different. The Cubs were – it was an odd situation. I can speak for myself.
That's like me with the Yankees.
No, it's not.
I would never – the only time is when they play Boston.
No, I'm a White Sox fan, but I had family members who lived and died Cubs fans that never got to see them win, right? That win – in 2016, transcended any sort of rivalry. I was happy for the Cubs because I was happy for all my dead relatives. Yes, we had rivalries when they were alive, and it was venomous, and it was back and forth. But all I could think about at that time was how happy they would have been because unlike the Yankees and Mets, right, it's not 110 years.
Yeah.
That was that outlier. That was – but, I mean, I'm sure it feels like 110 years for Knicks fans. You know what I mean? So don't fool yourself, right? Sports can be fun. Cofield said he'd never talk to someone if he was a Knicks fan and he cheered for a Nets championship at some point. What are they going to do? You're never going to get one as a Knicks fan. You got to compromise. Life's about compromise. See you tomorrow, friends, on the Mac Attack.